Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is For the Record program number 272, titled, And They Shall Reap the Whirlwind. This is being recorded on January 26th of the year 2001. There's a famous passage from the Bible, which I cannot quote verbatim, but which goes roughly, those who sow the wind shall reap the whirlwind. And that is the derivation of the title of this program, and apologies to biblical scholars for not having the quote quite right. In numerous broadcasts, including five interviews with Dr. Nick Begich, the author, along with Gene Manning of Angels Don't Play This Harp, we've discussed the harp system, the patents for which state that the beaming of microwaves into the ionosphere, of electromagnetic radiation into the ionosphere, among other things, is to be done in order to alter the weather for military purposes. And again, this is the stated application, or one of the stated applications for the patents based on Tesla technology. The developer of those patents was Dr. Bernard Eastland, last named E-A-S-T-L-U-N-D, and the use of weather alteration and environmental modification for military purposes goes specifically against a treaty that the U.S. and Soviet Union had concluded in the mid-1970s. We're going to take a look not only at plans to continue to alter the weather for perhaps military purposes, but we're going to tie that in with a number of other things, and one of the main tie-ins will be a speculative tie-in to the remarkable and deadly Borman Flight Capital Organization. I'm going to be going quickly in this program, and many of the references will be, and this is redundant, referential, so if interested listeners do not fully understand the context in which the things that I'm presenting are based or should be understood, I understand that. Contact Spitfire, a tape duplication service about which I will tell you more later in the program, time permitting, and you can flesh out your understanding by examining some of the other broadcasts and or the descriptions for those programs on the World Wide Web. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience. This listener researched this for us from the CBS News online website at www.cbsnews.com/now/story. This is Dateline Los Angeles, California, on January 16th of the year 2001, and this is titled, Could Tornadoes Be Prevented? And it reads as follows. Obviously, this is a CBS News story. Quote, it sounded like a freight train as it passed right over us, unquote. That's a typical description of one of the most terrifying experiences on Earth, an encounter with a tornado. Every year, on average, 100 people are killed by the 1,000 tornadoes that rip across America. But what if we could eliminate tornadoes? As CBS News correspondent Jerry Bowen, B-O-W-E-N, reports, a former Star Wars Defense Program scientist, who knows he's regarded as something of a nutty professor, believes he has a way to tame the twisters. The basic thought, says Ben Eastland, again E-A-S-T-L-U-N-D, again quoting, is to find the right spot in one of the storms, the area where the energy is going into rotation, and to change it, unquote. The last name E-A-S-T-L-U-N-D is an identical to the spelling of Bernard Eastland. This is almost certainly the same individual, but whether or not this is Bernard Eastland, and that's a pretty good bet, it would not matter whether this was his brother's mother under the circumstances. Bear in mind that as we looked at in our programs with Dr. Begich about HARP, one of the stated applications, another of the stated applications, in addition to altering the weather for military purposes, was to use this electromagnetic system in order to knock down incoming missiles. It is basically the frontier of, quote, Star Wars or missile defense technology. Continuing with what Ben, in all likelihood, Bernard Eastland of HARP fame has proposed here, or perhaps a relative, Eastland came up with his theory while brainstorming at his home in Del Mar, California, an area that never experiences tornadoes. Quote, it's suspected that a tornado forms between a hot updraft and a cold, rainy downdraft. Now, with microwaves, I could heat the cold, rainy downdraft, unquote. The job would be done with a 500-foot-wide beam of microwave energy aimed toward Earth from an orbiting satellite. But will it work? Not everyone agrees. Quote, the trouble with all these schemes beaming energy from space down into storms is we're not certain how well they'll work, unquote, says Stephen Schneider, S-C-H-E-N-E-I-D-E-R, a global warming expert at Stanford University. Despite the fact that it's worked on a computer model, Critics say Eastland's unproven, untested theory could actually make tornadoes worse. Note that, because one of the things we're going to explore is the possibility that tornadoes might be made worse or perhaps even created. And again, that is an altogether hypothetical approach under the circumstances. Continuing with this article, quote, "We really don't understand supercells enough to start fooling around with things like this," unquote, says John Monteverdi, a meteorologist at San Francisco State University. Last name for that gentleman, Monteverdi. But one thing is already known. In order to achieve its mission, Eastland's microwave beam would be intense enough to explode birds and cripple airplanes in its path. So precision targeting and warning systems would be a must. Note the need here for precision targeting. Note also that this hypothetical system would be based in space on an orbiting satellite. Continuing, critics like Schneider say that's hardly reassuring. Quote, "If you're going to start playing with the system and monkeying around, you'd better have a fund to pay those people who get hurt when anything goes wrong," unquote. But if Eastland is a scientist on the edge, he has good company. Note who he is funded by. His research is funded by the European Space Agency. And scientists at both the Federal Emergency Management Agency and Sandia Labs in New Mexico, home to Defense Department research, believe it may be worth exploring even if it proves to be impractical. So what's next? If NASA gets on board, Eastland hopes to test his theory from the International Space Station, zapping waterspouts in the open ocean, and then taking on a tornado to see if you really can microwave Mother Nature. Note several things here. First of all, that only 100 people lose their lives to tornadoes each year in the United States. That's not to be cynical about their lives, but there are any number of things that cause a lot more destruction of human life than tornadoes. Note also that Eastland's research, and again, this is almost certainly the same Eastland that helped develop the HARP patents, if not probably a blood relative. But again, that wouldn't even matter. As I said, it might even be his brother's mother. But it's likely Bernard Eastland. Note, he is funded by the European Space Agency. When was the last time you heard about a tornado in Europe? Note also that FEMA, the agency under which the martial law contingency plans were first put on the books back in the mid-1980s, is one of the agencies that's expressed interest in this, as well as a Defense Department research laboratory in New Mexico at Sandia Laboratories. Again, this from the CBS News online website from January 16th of the year 2001. Now, bear in mind, first of all, the employer of Ben, or perhaps Bernard Eastland, it's the European Space Agency, and they don't have tornadoes in Europe, that I'm aware of. Now, we're going to look at some other hypothetical elements, and what I'm asking, perhaps, is if these hypothetical elements might be connected or could be connected. We're going to move now to the San Jose Mercury News of Tuesday, January 9th of the year 2001. This is an op-ed column by Alan Tonelson, T-O-N-E-L-S-O-N. He is described here as a research fellow with the U.S. Business and Industry Council Education Foundation, a business-affiliated research group. This column is titled by the San Jose Mercury News, "Spy Tech, the U.S. Edge," and it reads in part as follows. When Dick Cheney and Colin Powell were overseeing U.S. military operations during the Persian Gulf War in 1990 and 91, much of their intelligence data on Saddam Hussein's forces were the result of technology that came from Tinsley Laboratories of Richmond, California. Tinsley, T-I-N-S-L-E-Y, has been the sole manufacturer of many of the state-of-the-art mirrors and lenses in the high-powered cameras carried by America's spy satellite systems that the Clinton administration has called, quote, among the most valuable U.S. national security assets, unquote. The U.S. government has long sought to restrict foreign access to this technology, but that's about to change. As Cheney, Powell, and the rest of the Bush team prepare to take office, Tinsley's parent company, Silicon Valley Group Incorporated, is scheduled to pass into foreign hands. Note that the parent company is Silicon Valley Group. We're going to focus on that company and its history in a minute. Resuming with the last sentence, as Cheney, Powell, and the rest of the Bush team prepare to take office, Tinsley's parent company, Silicon Valley Group Incorporated, is scheduled to pass into foreign hands. Unless the Clinton administration acts by Friday, its legal authority to hold up the proposed sale will expire, and the U.S. manufacturer will become part of a Dutch company, ASM Lithography. Since ASM announced the acquisition of SVG Tinsley in October, President Clinton's leading national security advisors have not shown much interest in closely reviewing the deal. Some career government officials are saying privately that their superiors do not seem adequately focused on determining whether foreign ownership of SVG Tinsley will damage U.S. national security interests. Last week, the issue got the attention of Senator Robert F. Bennett, Republican of Utah. He asked Treasury Secretary Lawrence H. Summers, whose department heads an interagency committee charged with evaluating the impact of such takeovers on national security, to authorize a full investigation of the acquisition. Ordering such an investigation would have the effect of delaying the sale for at least 45 days, enough time for the new administration to block the deal. It will also give President-elect Bush a chance to show that he is serious about rebuilding the U.S. military and maintaining control over its high-tech foundations. Skipping down, SVG is going to be purchased by ASM Lithography. They are based in the Netherlands. And the column continues, skipping down, although the Netherlands plainly deserves its reputation as a loyal NATO ally, some U.S. defense and intelligence officials worry that ASM's far-flung global operations and corporate alliances with companies like Germany's Carl Zeiss, capital Z-E-I-S-S, and Schott Glass, capital S-C-H-O-T-T, could make it more difficult to keep SVG Tinsley's advanced optics and lithography capabilities from migrating to unfriendly countries. And we're going to take a look at a couple of past examples of the Zeiss and Schott firms and their operations against the United States in wartime in just a minute. Skipping down in the column, SVG Tinsley's technologies are found throughout the U.S. military's highest tech systems and are crucial to the Pentagon's future plans. In addition to strengthening the U.S. reconnaissance network, the company's optics are used in the lasers in missile defense systems being developed by the U.S. government's nuclear weapons labs at Livermore, California, and Sandia, New Mexico. Note that this is the same area where both Ben Eastland, probably Bernard Eastland, and also the aforementioned Sandia laboratories discussed in that tornado article. That's the same area where these particular elements crop up, among others. Read the last sentence again. In addition to strengthening the U.S. reconnaissance network, the company's optics are used in the lasers in missile defense systems being developed by the U.S. government's nuclear weapons lab at Livermore, California, and Sandia, New Mexico. What we're going to do now is to take a look at the book Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile. That's the story of the remarkable and deadly Bormann Flight Capital Organization, literally the economic component of a Third Reich gone underground. This book was authored by Paul Manning, a member of the CBS News team that covered the war in Europe, along with Edward R. Murrow. Manning trained as a gunner on a B-17 in order to cover the raids into Western Europe, shot down an ME-109, broadcast the surrender of Germany on the CBS radio network, then flew missions as a member of a crew of a B-29 into Japan, and broadcast the surrender of Japan on the CBS radio network as well, then used his connections with Alan Dulles, among other things, to investigate the remarkable and deadly Bormann Flight Capital Organization, the political and economic component of a Third Reich gone underground. I realize that that will appear crazy to uninitiated listeners. I've done numerous broadcasts about that in the past that are available from Spitfire and that will flesh out listeners' understanding. Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, was published in hardcover by Lyle Stewart, Lyle Stewart Books. It's copyright 1981. The ISBN number is 0-8184-0309-8. And Manning, in addition to having his career destroyed, had his son Jerry murdered in 1993 in retaliation for his prospective publishing of another book about Martin Borman. Now, when the Borman Flight Capital Organization was set up, and by the way, there was actually a U.S. intelligence operation conducted under the Treasury Department, Operation Safe Haven, to investigate this flight capital program, the basis for that capital program was laid down at a meeting on August 10, 1944, in Strasbourg, France, and this was presided over by an SS officer named Dr. Scheid, S-C-H-E-I-D. One of the two of the companies that were mentioned as probable vehicles or likely prospects for furthering the interests of the Borman Flight Capital Organization in secreting the Third Reich's wealth abroad and preparing for a revival of Nazism. And this, again, taken directly from the Operation Safe Haven documents as researched by Paul Manning. Now, note two of the companies that were discussed here in the plans for the Borman Organization. Turning to Martin Borman, Nazi in exile, and the Dr. Scheid here is SS Lieutenant General Dr. Scheid. He also cited the Zeiss Company, the Leica Company, and the Hamburg America Line as typical firms that had been especially effective in protecting German interests abroad. He gave New York addresses to the 12 men. Well, the Zeiss Company, of course, is the very same Zeiss firm that has connections with ASM Lithography, as we will see ASM Lithography holding. And I would note that the Hamburg America Line was one of the partnerships that the Bush family had with the Third Reich. And in For the Record Program 186 and in number 273, about to be recorded, the circumstantial links, probably more than that, but circumstantial evidence, I should say, indicating that the Bush family may very well be part of the Borman Group. Well, they were explored in those broadcasts. Again, For the Record Program 186 and number 273. What we're going to do next is to take a look at a section of one of the very first archive shows, in fact, the first one that's on file with Spitfire. This broadcast is Uncle Sam and the Swastika, U.S. Industrial Cooperation with the Third Reich, and you're going to be hearing an excerpt from the book All Honorable Men, authored by James Stuart Martin, published by Little Brown Books, copyright 1950. James Stuart Martin was the U.S. Justice Department official in charge with investigating the U.S.-German industrial links, about which I've spoken so many times in the past. Now, the context here concerns the cartel agreements between German corporations and American corporations that not only restricted various critical elements of wartime manufacturing in the United States, but which gave an advantage to the Germans. And again, this subject is covered at great length in numerous broadcasts, including Uncle Sam and the Swastika from May 23rd of 1980, which you're going to listen to. Note in particular, the Schott Works at Jena, that's the very same Schott firm, which along with the aforementioned Zeiss firm, has very strong operational links with ASM Lithography of the Netherlands.
Editorial solemnly pronounced that all such arrangements should be out for the duration, unquote. These business arrangements operated at focal points where it was possible to turn on and off the main valves in economic pipelines. It was not long before we found out that the arrangement of valves and pipelines was a two-way affair. Our elation at the discovery that practically all of Germany's fine optical glass came from one factory, the Schott Works at Jena, was counteracted by the discovery that under the same working arrangement, only one such factory of any importance existed in the United States.
That again excerpted from Uncle Sam and the Swastika from May 23rd of 1980, and in turn from the book All Honorable Men by James Stuart Martin. In For the Record program number 87 from February of 1998, that program is titled Uncle Sam and the Swastika Redux, we took a look at a lawsuit that's been filed by Persian Gulf War veterans against various firms for arming Saddam Hussein, and one of the firms that was being sued or is being sued is the aforementioned Schott Works. So in at least two wars, the Schott Works has apparently been involved in helping to work against the United States on behalf of its enemies, first Nazi Germany, and then the United States. Now, note again that the research by Ben, in all likelihood Bernard Eastland, of HAARP fame, and which is obviously connected to the HAARP type of research, is being funded by the European Space Agency, and that, in turn, it is going to require precision targeting and warning systems. And again, this is from space. Just bear in mind the possibilities if the spy satellite technology that Tinsley Laboratories and Silicon Valley Group are the parent of. If that were to be accessed by an American enemy, say potentially in the future Germany or another European country, or a German protege such as the Iraqis, that could have devastating effects indeed. More about the sale of Silicon Valley Group to ASM Lithography Holding, note that name, this from the Wall Street Journal of Tuesday, January 9th of the year 2001. An article by Glenn R. Simpson at Stateline, Washington, and headlined, ASM Lithography Will Wait to Acquire Silicon Valley Group. Now note the name of this company and note a couple of other aspects as well. Skipping down in this Wall Street Journal article, we read, ASM Lithography Holding, note that, NV, said it has withdrawn its petition for U.S. Treasury Department approval of the $1.6 billion acquisition of Silicon Valley Group, San Jose, California, pending inquiries by the Committee on Foreign Investment in the U.S., an interagency group run by the Treasury. ASM Lithography of Veldhoven, Netherlands, said it remains confident of approval, but the withdrawal of its petition will probably defer a final decision on the matter until after President-elect George W. Bush takes office. Skipping down, Silicon Valley Group makes advanced optical equipment critical to semiconductor manufacturing and counts chipmaker Intel Corporation as its biggest customer. And skipping down, ASM Lithography's withdrawal of its petition, quote, means they run into trouble, but they think it's just a matter of more time, unquote, said Stuart Baker, a Washington attorney who handles national security matters. So note now that this is going to be deferred until after the Bush administration has taken office, which of course it has. That was from January 9th and the Wall Street Journal. Now note, first of all, that Intel Corporation is among the biggest customers of ASM Lithography. That would put, or of Silicon Valley Group, that would put ASM Lithography in a position to wield decisive influence with regard to the manufacturing of computer chips and Intel in particular. Note also, although like many of the connections that I'm pointing out here, it's by no means definitive, note also that this is a holding company, and as we've looked at in several broadcasts, the Bormann Organization and the Third Reich cannibalized European economies, and the Bormann Group remained in post-war control of many European economies and corporations by virtue of the holding companies that were at the core of the Bormann Group. Returning once again to Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, we read, a holding company may not trade in any form. It may only hold stock in other companies, but through this device, the existing German firms and the 750 new corporations established under the Bormann program gave themselves absolute control over a post-war economic network of viable, prosperous companies that stretched from the Ruhr to the neutrals of Europe to the countries of South America, a control that continues today and is easily maintained through the bearer bonds or shares issued by these corporations to cloak real ownership. So the question I'm asking here, of course, is whether the Bormann Group might, in fact, be in control of ASM Lithography. This is obviously hypothetical. And another very disturbing thing concerns the origins of the firm Silicon Valley Group. Research credit on the following goes to a member of the listening audience who got this from the ADL's website at www.adl.org/tycoons. This article is titled Computer Millionaires Fund Hate, subtitled Carl Story, Vincent Bertolini, and the 11th Hour Remnant Messenger. And skipping down, we read, the boom of the 1990s made a number of Silicon Valley entrepreneurs fabulously rich. Many of these individuals have spent princely sums on luxury items and contributed vast amounts of cash to charities. But two of their number, Carl E. Story and Richard Vincent Bertolini, have chosen a different path. They use their wealth to promote hate. And let's look at where their wealth comes from. In the mid-1970s, Story and business partner Gerald M. Starak operated II Industries, a computer chip processing company. After selling II Industries, Story, Starak, and others founded the Silicon Valley Group, or SVG, in 1977. So these are the founders of the Silicon Valley Group. Story and Starek were convicted in 1979 for shipping computer chip manufacturing equipment to the USSR. This equipment allegedly was used to improve Soviet missile guidance systems. Story pled guilty, paid a fine, and was sentenced to 3 years probation. In the mid-1980s, Story parted ways with SVG, taking home an enormous profit. Today, SVG is one of the nation's leading companies producing computer chip manufacturing equipment, a publicly traded firm with total assets exceeding $700 million. Story's hateful beliefs have been thoroughly disavowed by SVG's present management. Story and Bertolini, by the way, have moved to Sandpoint, Idaho, one of the epicenters of the white supremacist movement, and have become leading financial backers of the Aryan Nations. Writing of the Aryan Nations and its leader, Richard Gernt Butler, this article goes on to comment, Butler and his staff leader, Michael Teague, T-E-A-G-U-E, appreciate the 11th-hour remnant messenger's financial assistance. Quote, before we were just Nazis who were poor up on the hill, unquote. Teague told a reporter from the Los Angeles Times, we've been operating on a shoestring for so long that it was nice to get to do something the other side gets to do all the time, Butler commented. Don't forget, the Jews control the newspapers, they control the radio, they control the TV, unquote. They do an excellent job. They spread the word of God, Butler said of Story and Bertolini to a reporter from the San Jose Mercury News. Later on in this article, Story and Bertolini and their 11th-hour remnant messenger describe their vision of a white supremacist anti-American Armageddon. The article describes it, 3 years before Armageddon, the 11th-hour remnant predicts that New York City, which they see as the Babylon described in the Bible, will be destroyed, spelling the end of the one-world system UN created by the Antichrist. After New York goes up in flames, Story and Bertolini believe that America, Mystery Babylon, will be nuked and will burn forever and ever. And that is a philosophy that could perhaps be realized if the tornado technology and the spy technology of Silicon Valley Group were ultimately married. Such a marriage would be something to contemplate if that sort of spy technology and the tornado technology were to be employed together. It could add a whole new level of meaning to the old Madison Avenue advertising slogan, a white tornado, perhaps the ultimate in ethnic cleansing. One of the questions I have is whether perhaps Silicon Valley Group may have originally been a Bormann company. I have the same question about ASM Lithography Holding. Whether or not ASM Lithography Holding and or Silicon Valley Group were and or still are Bormann companies, the fact that SVG is going to be or was founded by Story and Bertolini, despite the fact that they disavow their views, is something to bear in mind because Story and Bertolini are now funding the Aryan Nations. We're going to visit a short section of For the Record program number 40 called To Sandpoint and Beyond, and we're going to excerpt a book called Unholy Alliance by Peter Lavenda, published in softcover by Avon Books and copyright 1995. And we're going to listen to one of the funding sources for the Aryan Nations offshoot group, The Order.
And in the book Unholy Alliance, we read, according to one informant who told the story to former Order member Thomas Martinez, the Order was receiving contributions from German, quote, families, unquote, living in South America. This German Nazi, South American Nazi, North American Nazi link is reinforced by stories that German neo-Nazi terrorist Manfred Roeder, R-O-E-D-E-R, for instance, met with Dr. Mengele in Brazil as late as 1978 before coming to the States and meeting with American neo-Nazi groups.
That again excerpted from For the Record program number 40, titled To Sandpoint and Beyond. That's the home of Story and Bertolini. For an annotated description of For the Record program number 272, visit the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That concludes For the Record program number 272, They Shall Reap the Whirlwind. This is being recorded on January 26th of the year 2001. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.